Thanks for checking out the Reveal Vineyard podcast. Our mission is simple. Find God, find others, find yourself. That's it. We hope through these conversations, your spirit will be stirred. For more information on Reveal, you can visit our website at www.revealvineyard.com.
All right. Well, this is one of those messages for me where it's like, you know, you have this normal routine in life where you oversee this, you oversee that, and then every now and then you get asked to do a series or a short series, and you get to that last message, and you're kind of like, this is it. Like, I'm done talking, and then I can just, like, go back to my little cave back there in children's ministry world, and you'll never see me again. So, until the next time I have to speak. Well, last weekend we began a discussion about the least of these, or rather, I talked, not you, and I did all the talking, I admit that. And we're talking about the poor and the marginalized in this world and what God has to say on the matter. And we also mentioned how it's important for the church to be known for engaging the poor, because God said that our love for others should be the thing that distinguishes us from this world. And yes, we also learned that I have a man crush on Bono of U2, however, the church has a... We can take that down, please. Thank you. However, the church has a terrible track record for being known for the things that we oppose rather than who we are for. And now, last week, we saw God's clear intent for us to engage the poor in this world, not in theory or in good thoughts and feelings, but in meeting specific needs and, more importantly, restoring important relationships. Now, I don't think you'll be surprised me telling you up front that when it comes to the care of orphans, we all have a role to play. In fact, we need to say yes to the next generation. See, you just thought I was lazy and didn't want to wear a decent shirt. I actually had a... Never mind. Well, fortunately, there are a variety of roles. So for those of you who are thinking, care of orphans, I'm out. Have a seat. Breathe easy. I have something else in mind for you. Now, my own story with adoption actually begins with me. I was adopted by my father at 6 years old. I didn't actually know that until I was 10, so it kind of created a very awkward memory for me. I remember my mom taking me to pick up some chicken from KFC, and she was like, you know, oh, you know, you should probably know. And I'm like, I'm adopted, you know. And she's like, yeah. And so now, like, I don't eat fried chicken, but it's kind of a scarring event. No, I'm just kidding. But when I look back at my life, I've never thought of my father as anything but my father. He never gave me a reason to think otherwise. You know, he never treated me like anything other than a son that was really his son. And so I've never questioned his love for me. And so this early impression of how a man could love a son, regardless of genetics, was a very strong and positive one from an early onset in my life. Now, shortly into my marriage, my wife and I came across a young girl named Chelsea. She lived in our apartment complex, and her parents were kind of into some bad stuff. And so whenever we were out walking our dog Ginger at the time, she would join us, you know, pepper us with all kinds of questions. What's your name? What's your dog's name? How are you guys married? Do you guys hold hands? You know, and just all these questions. And she would kind of just, you know, kind of bombard you. And you know, we kind of started figuring out, you know, what was going on with this kid. Because she was pretty much just left to fend for herself. And so we tried to kind of build some bridges with the parents as best as we knew how at the time. We were very young. And eventually, Chelsea started joining us for meals and zoo trips. And eventually, we would take her to church. And I'll never forget the night that I decided I needed to call CPS. I had never been that nervous in my life. And I had called to report the fact that, look, this child is being neglected, and she's constantly being exposed to drug use, drug dealing, and other things. And the response that I got and how that whole thing played out was kind of our first glimpse into how broken our system in this state is, and probably across the entire United States. Now, Chelsea would eventually move away as her parents were running away to Indiana. But the most miraculous thing happened in that her mom reached out to us, and we reconnected. And eventually, we began to build that trust again, and we would bring Chelsea out every summer. We'd take her on a vacation. This was before we had kids, and so we'd take her to Disneyland and Universal Studios and, you know, and SeaWorld and all that stuff. And, of course, our kids were like, why don't you do that for us? And we're like, we already did it. We're done. And, you know, and so we just continued to sow into her. And we didn't see it at the time, and we didn't think this way at the time, but God was really grooming us and even using us to care for orphans. Now, the truth be told, Audrey and I, we discussed very early on in our marriage that we intended to adopt. We knew we would. We just didn't know how or when. And so when Naomi was 2, we first poked our head into the adoption world. You see, we had a very difficult time having Naomi. We had tons of failures and miscarriages and things of that nature. And we had been trying for 2 years to get pregnant with our second child. And so we thought, well, it may be time to, you know, increase our family through other means. And so, you know, we didn't want to continue to, you know, be anguished and frustrated. So, you know, we decided it's probably time to just go ahead and adopt. And the decision wasn't difficult because we already thought we would do this. What proved to be difficult was how we were going to adopt. We were going to do it stateside, you know, and deal with all the, you know, the stereotypes that, you know, kind of get, you know, woven into what happens when you adopt kids out of the system. Or were we going to go, you know, outside the United States where, you know, it seems safer, you weren't going to have other issues. And again, all these weird things that were kind of playing on our minds that were kind of fed to us, you know, we took into account. And so after, you know, thinking it through, we decided to adopt out of country. So after much research, we settled on Colombia. Why Colombia? Well, my wife was from Panama, and they had a very similar culture. I mean, they both spoke Spanish. They were both connected to drug cartels. You know, so there's this, you know, this is all kind of all, the only thing you really need in life, right? But the other thing that really impressed us was about Colombia was how their culture embraced adoption. There was like this excitement about adoption in their country. I'm like, wow, this is different. Because it was illegal to have abortions, and so they really made a big deal about adoptions. And so that really captured our attention. But as God would have it, the day we had our meeting scheduled with the lawyer from Colombia to move things forward, my wife found out that she was pregnant with our second son, or our second child, our first son, Liam. So that kind of put things on hold. So a couple years later, we are entertaining the idea of adoption again. We had since stopped trying to get pregnant because it was a very difficult process for us. Well, when I say difficult process for us, I really mean for my wife. My part was easy. Needless to say, as we mentally and emotionally engaged the idea of adoption again, we discovered that Audrey was pregnant again with our third child, Elliot. Yeah, you clap now. wait till he's in your classroom again. Well, his pregnancy was a very difficult one, which was foreshadowing of who he was going to become. But the reality was, it was very hard on my wife physically. So after she had Elliot, she sent me off to the butcher's office to make sure that any more surprises were not going to happen in life. And so we still had plans to adopt, but we thought, you know, we'll wait until Elliot's 5. We want the kids to be a part of the process. We want to have dialogue with them. We want them to have ownership about the issue. And so we will adopt, but we're just going to wait. So here I am thinking, I've got some time to kill. No, not the case. So when Elliot turned 3, I came across a series of small books released by the Barna Group called Frames. And in this series of books, they did research in all these different issues throughout our culture. And they looked at what the implications were of that research. And then they also gave kind of a take on how the church could or should respond to these issues. And one of the books that I read was a small little book called Becoming Home. And it dealt specifically with the area of fostering and adoption. I remember telling my wife that I didn't really feel like I had a choice, that if I took my relationship with Jesus seriously, I had to be involved with orphans somehow. And I have to be honest, I had all the reservations that probably many of you have right now or have had in the past when it came to this issue. But what I have come to learn about God is that if you are surrendered to him, he tends to win the arguments. Well, he won this one. So my wife and I went through all the work of getting our foster licensing, and then the day we were being handed off from our recruiting licensing agent, we were literally sitting at the table with Scott and Christine. And she's like, all right, you're no longer officially mine. You belong to him now, and he'll be the one to follow up with you. We get a phone call right in the middle of the meeting. We've got a little girl, 18 months old, and she's got burns over 50% of her bodies, and we're taking her to a shelter. Will you take her? Her eyes were like this. Burns? Yes. And then they said, well, no, it's not going to happen. And, you know, it's too much paperwork. So we're going to go ahead and, you know, take her to the shelter. But don't put your phone down because you're going to get a phone call. You'll get a phone call that night, maybe the next day, but definitely before the weekend's out. So we're like, all right, you got your phone, you know, there. And we actually went to a party that Saturday night. In fact, it was your birthday party. And we're there at the birthday party. And you ever have those moments where you're expecting a phone call and you know you're listening out, but then you kind of get into this, you know, conversation. You know me, I gab. I don't know if you noticed that. So I'm talking, and all of a sudden, it's like I stop. It's like my brain is like, hello, your phone is ringing. And so it's like, you know, and I don't have one of those, you know, ringtones. You know, I'm too cool for that. I got to have a song, you know. And so I've got this song playing. I'm like, I hear the song. And it's like, you know, I'm looking around for my phone. And so you pull it out, and just as you get ready to swipe, the call ends. And like, no! And so you're like, you know, I swipe, and you're calling back, and you're calling back. And, of course, no case manager in the state of Arizona sets up their voicemail. So you can't leave them a message, okay, because they don't want to hear it, all right? And so you can't get a hold of anyone. I'm like, no, we missed it. Some child is going to suffer for the rest of their life because we didn't get this call, you know? And then we never got a hold of anybody. Nobody ever called us back. Well, then Sunday, I get home from church, and my wife says, Scott called. Scott was our licensing agent. And she said, he's pulling us off the placement list. I'm like, are we that bad already? Like, we haven't even had anybody yet, and they're already kicking us out. I'm like, no. They're going to go get that little girl that was taken to that shelter. And so on May 4th, Audrey and I drove down to a shelter in Mesa to pick up Mariah. And we have been on quite the learning curve since that day. Let me just say that. Now, here's the thing. Regardless of what your worldview is, when it comes to the care of orphans, this should be a priority. Because it doesn't matter if your top concern in life is one of economics, politics, religion, or education. The care of children, especially those who have been orphaned in some way or another, should be a major concern to you. Because the truth is, the health of these kids, relationally, mentally, emotionally, spiritually, it will have a direct impact on those things that matter the most to you in life. Now, I've got to warn you, this message has a lot of numbers, and I understand that numbers don't tell an individual story. But for the purposes of our discussion today, they're going to give us a better view of the scope and the gravity of this issue that we're talking about when it comes to the care of orphans. Now, I should also qualify what I mean by the term orphan. Okay, the biblical term orphan comes from the Hebrew word yatom, and it refers specifically to a fatherless child. So technically, an orphan in biblical days could still have his mother. However, his mother was not in a position culturally to provide, defend his legal rights, defend him, protect him physically, and so he was considered vulnerable. And so when the Bible talks about orphans, it's really talking about someone whose dad is no longer in the picture. Now, for our discussion today, an orphan is any child who does not actively have a responsible adult caring for their needs, protecting their rights, or defending them from the many kinds of predators out there in this world. So while, yes, it does include children who've lost their parents physically, it also includes children who've been given up for adoption. It also includes children who are currently in our foster system. And the reality is this, before we even press into this, when you're involved with this system, you get to be Christ to more than just the children that you take into your home. You get to be Christ to the bio parents. You get to be Christ to case managers, licensing agents. You get to be Christ to lawyers, and sometimes even judges. And so this is a really rich mission field. The only problem is that there's not enough of us on that field. Now, it's very common for people to separate the issue of adoption from that of fostering, but in reality, they are truly part of the same stream, because kids typically enter the foster system before entering into any kind of adoption process, typically. Some sort of trauma happens, okay, which triggers the authorities into action. Well, then the authorities investigate and determine if the situation for the child is safe or if they need to be removed. So, and then if they're removed, they go into the foster system while tons of evaluation goes into deciding if kids will return home or enter the adoption stream. Even children who have been adopted overseas have been placed in a foster system locally. Now, I know I've completely oversimplified that, but it was really just to point out that foster and adoption go hand in hand versus being separate issues. Now, if you look at this from a bird's eye view, the most tragic point for these kids is really when they enter the foster care system, because they've had the trauma. It's fresh. They're scared. And this is really where they're the most vulnerable. Now, as Christians, we need to be all over that thing, all over that picture. But where the kids are the most vulnerable, that is where the church needs to have the most impact, because that is where we're needed. Now, I got to warn you, the numbers that we're going to talk about aren't pretty. Okay, so I'm not trying to pull any rabbit punches. I'm not trying to make you feel good. I'm just going to be honest with you. Okay? Because we need to look at the system and think about what can we really do to bring a solution to the table. Now, Christians in this country, we talk a good game when it comes to orphan care. But the truth is, we failed to show up to the fight. According to the Adoption and Foster Care Analysis and Reporting System, there were 415,129 children in the foster care system across the United States in 2014. Now, of those 415,000 children, 108,000 are waiting to be adopted. In the state of Arizona alone, there are nearly 17,000 children in foster care. And recently, Gregory McKay urged foster families to consider taking on more children because the state didn't have enough beds for the kids that are currently in the system. So there are kids that are being, you know, crammed into group homes or shelters, and in some cases, they're even staying in the offices of their case managers because there's simply not enough beds for these children. This simply should not be. Think about this. There are more than 316 million Americans in the United States. And, you know, most estimates say that between 30 to 34% are actually born-again Christians. Hey, let's take the lower end of that spectrum. So 30%. If 30% of our country's population are actually born-again believers, we're talking about 95 million people. That's 200 times the number of children of need that have needs in our foster care system. Yet there are children that are not in homes. And so there's a reason why the church needs to step up and eradicate that gap. Now, I get that not everyone can or will foster or adopt, and I'm not here to wrestle you down on that point or make you feel guilty if you don't agree with my point of view. However, here is where the disconnect seems to be, and this is what we got to clean up. 38% of born-again Christians say that they seriously have considered adoption, yet only 5% have actually followed through on that. 31% said that they have seriously considered fostering, yet only 3% are currently doing so. So we've got great intentions, we just got poor follow-through. Now, I know that the picture is not that simple. Okay, the process that children go through from being removed from their homes to entering the foster system to either returning home, being adopted, or sadly enough, even aged out of the system is a very broken and complicated one. In fact, it's one of the major reasons why so many quit the fostering gig to begin with. And even in my own short experience, I have stood on that ledge several times. So I certainly don't want to paint this rosy picture that we just need to Photoshop you into, okay? But I need us to see the reality of the situation and yet still figure out how to become part of the solution. But we also need to hold on to hope, because I know that the picture looks dismal, but we have an opportunity to see lives changed, because they will be. I recently read a book called Simplify by Bill Hybels. And one of the things that he has you do in this book is choose a life verse. You know, the life verse is supposed to focus you on who you're becoming. What are you living for? And is your time being spent on lining you up with becoming that person? And so as I'm, you know, shuffling through and trying to finish, you know, find a life verse that just jumps out at me, that grabs my attention, that lines up with my passions, I found this. James 1:27. Pure and genuine religion in the sight of God the Father means caring for orphans and widows in their distress and refusing to let the world corrupt you. I mean, that's an entire life mission right there in that one verse. And as a side note, I love the book of James. The book of James is like my favorite book because what you're reading is actually the words of Jesus' brother. Okay, I love how Annie Stanley always jokes. He says, you know, what would you have to do to convince your brother or sister that you were the Son of God, right? And so here was a guy that had insight first. So if there was ever a reason to discredit Jesus or point out his flaws, here was a guy who could have done it. Yeah, he doesn't. Yet he calls him Lord and Savior. Another great verse that will help simplify things for you comes from Isaiah. You know, a lot of times the prophets were speaking. God was, you know, trying to tell the people of Israel, you're going in this bad direction. Stop doing this stuff. Go this way instead. And here's what Isaiah 1:17 says. It says, learn to do good. Seek justice. Help the oppressed. Defend the cause of orphans. Fight for the rights of widows. I tried to drop a Beastie Boys joke in there at the last service. It didn't go over well, so I left it out this time. Again, there's enough in that verse for a lifetime of work. And honestly, I'd be really surprised if there was anybody here today that didn't think that God cared about the plight of orphans. I mean, it was something that was built into the very fabric of Jewish culture. You know, when you were harvesting your crop every year, you only went over your fields once. You didn't go back a second and third time and make sure you got all the crop that you could so that you could make all the money off of that. No, you went over once, and you were required by law to leave the rest there so that the widows and the orphans and even the foreigners could come and glean off of your fields. Now, this was very impacting to me because it was a stark reminder that God never intended me to consume all that I have. And I talked a little bit about that last week. But I need to purposely leave margin in my life, specifically my finances and my time, to care for others less fortunate. Now, sometimes I wonder if I've worked harder in my life than I really needed to. And that bugs me because I'm really addicted to efficiency. But because I've been living from a mentality that whatever I had was mine, and yet I never seem to have enough. You ever feel that way? But when I look at God's word, I see people who lived with intentional margin, and yet they never suffered from want. You know, they made sure that they looked out for orphans and widows, and God made sure that he looked out for them. I'm like, you know, that's the kind of life I want to have. So as we contemplate how to engage the issue of orphans, we need to keep in mind that this is really a twofold mission. And the first and foremost is we need to preserve families. Because sometimes the best thing for vulnerable children is to ensure that they don't lose the family that they have. That we engage and empower these struggling families to improve their lives, improve their situations. Whenever possible, we should do all we can to keep a struggling family together or safely reunite those who've been separated before we consider any other solutions. We have to remember, not every parent of a child in the foster care system is a terrible, horrible person. They are God's children. They're precious to him. And the truth is they've gotten off course. And most likely, they've never been shown the way to begin with. So there needs to be as much grace as possible. And I do say as possible. Now, I'm not ignorant of what exists in this world, okay? I've seen the same news reports that you have. And I understand that there are parents that don't deserve that right, okay? But I'm just suggesting that the news tends to focus on the extreme examples. And they don't share the good ones. Because for every news report that I've read that is a horror story, I've also heard of amazing turnaround in the life of someone because a Christian in the foster care system invested in them, showed them grace, treated them like a human being, and believed the best about them. And so I think there's more to this than just being the heroes and having this God complex when it comes to rescuing children and then looking down on parents. We need to be better than that. The second part of the mission for orphans is a placement into families. Think about the Air Force for a second. Okay, it's the only military I know, so you have to bear with me. But when you imagine what the Air Force is or what its mission is about, it's really about the jets. It's about the planes. Okay, and the mission is to get those planes in the air and support any overall war or peacekeeping effort that's going on. Now, I'm sure you realize this, but not everybody in the Air Force actually flies a plane. We all know that, right? In fact, only about 4.5% of those active duty in the Air Force are actually pilots. However, everyone still has the same mission: get the planes in the air. So while there's a smaller percentage of those who are pilots, everyone else plays a support role to ensure that the pilots are the best at what they do. Now, in a similar fashion, there are less people in this church who will do foster care or adoption. But the whole church still has the same mission when it comes to the needs of orphans. The only difference is that we need more pilots in the orphan care business, because there are too many children up for adoption that are not finding a family. And there are too many children that are in group homes or shelters because there are not enough families willing to take them in. I mean, that would be like the United States going to war but having thousands of grounded airplanes because nobody wants to be trained as a pilot. We're at war, people. We'll be fine. Those planes will be fine. No, people would be stepping up to get into those jet fighters and fight the fight. We need to do the same thing when it comes with these kids. Are you tracking with me? Okay, good. Now, the church should be the greatest support system for orphans in this world, and we should be involved in some way or another, okay? And you know what's interesting? Most people in the United States agree that the church, that the Christians, should be involved with caring for orphans. In fact, 65% of them think that the church should be the ones doing this. Now, granted, this is going to look different for everyone, and we're getting there. Not everyone can adopt a child, but more can. We should have more than 5% of the church adopting children. Everyone wants a baby, so we also need to think about adopting older kids. Because there's more kids that are older in this system not being adopted than there are babies. Because everyone's a baby. They're cute. They're, you know, they're not broken. Blah, 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 blah. I get all of that. And I say this with as much love and grace as I can. We need to be servants of these kids and not consumers. I know that comes off harsh, but the implications of a child not finding a family are even worse. And I would rather come off harsh now than continue to watch what happens when a child is completely abandoned. It's not worth it to me. Now, I also understand that not everyone is in a position to foster children. Okay, perhaps your current lifestyle or circumstances at home, you know, they're just not conducive at this time. However, we certainly need more than 3% of families in the church fostering children in this country. If anything, the church needs to put shelters and group homes for kids out of business. Okay? I remember during our training for fostering how the instructor would say that the most common reason people give for not fostering is that it's too hard to get the kids back. Well, I've heard that very same statement. But I love what they said and how they responded to that. They said, I understand how that feels. But if you think about it, when you look at it from that point of view, the whole thing is about your feelings and not what the needs of the children are. You know, as followers of Christ, we're supposed to live a sacrificial life, just like Jesus did. I mean, it was hard for him to suffer on the cross for our sins, but he didn't put his feelings first. Instead, he put our deepest needs first. You see, we needed to be reconciled to God. And these kids, they need to be restored as well. Now, if I can return to my Air Force analogy, we've established that only 4.5% of active duty members get to fly the planes, and everyone else supports the bigger mission. However, not everyone who supports the mission does so in the same way. Okay? There are different squadrons that have different specific ways that they support the bigger mission. So, for those of you who have been called into the support role for our foster and adoptive families, there are some specific ways for you to really step up. Now, the first squadron of support that foster and adoptive families need is simply financial support. No surprise there, right? I mean, anyone who has ever adopted a child knows that it can be a very costly experience, especially if that family is adopting a child out of country. There are legal fees, adoption fees, and in some cases, there are travel costs required, and the cost of getting a home ready for a new addition. And really, regardless of the age of the child being adopted, it's like bringing a newborn home. I mean, there's an adjustment period. There's lots of appointments to get kids documented as dependents, you know, getting sleep patterns in check, along with other normal family rhythms. And what do we commonly do for families of newborns? What do we do? All the women knew the answer, and the guys were like, we throw a shower for them, right? We throw them a shower. We celebrate and help prepare them for the journey ahead. We give gifts of clothing and items for the daily care of new children. And in the same way, when someone adopts a child, there are going to be things needed in the home immediately, whether it's a crib or a twin-size bed. This is an easy thing for the church to do. And of course, when I say the church, I'm talking about the people who make up the church, not the hired staff. We definitely play a role, but it's not just on that part of it. Now, families who foster also get hit with costs. Okay, when my wife and I were getting into this whole fostering thing and going through our home inspection, we had to drop some change to get things up to spec. Okay, the difference in standards that the state has for biological families are night and day difference from the standards that they have for foster families, okay? And let's just say that the standards that they have for us are to ensure that there is very, very minimal risk involved. In addition, these families never know who they're going to get. They may have a bed, but then they get placed with an infant. And when the infant arrives, the case manager doesn't come bearing baby furniture. You'll be lucky to get a fully stocked diaper bag if that's the case. You know, when you get an older kid, they don't typically come with a full furnished wardrobe. And DCS doesn't hand you an envelope of cash and say, here, go take care of whatever the kid needs. That doesn't happen. So many of these families are absorbing costs for hygiene items, clothing, shoes, school supplies, and other items for daily living. So another way to help financially is just with these kind of practical items that these foster and adoptive families need. You know, one of the most common needs that I hear about are beds. Because when it comes to children in the foster system, they have to have their own individual bed. Okay, not a futon, not a twin that they share with their sibling, not a mattress on the floor, but their own bed that is just theirs. Bunk beds work in some scenarios, but only certain age kids can be on them. Now, I don't know about you, I don't typically have a garage full of spare beds waiting to be used. Well, neither do most of these foster families. In fact, I'll never forget, there was a family in Goodyear last year, in fact. This family took in 5 siblings. They already had 4 of their own kids, okay? So they were almost a Reinhardt family, all right? A few people know that. So they have 9 kids. They took in 5 because they wanted to keep the sibling group together. And the state was willing to place them there because they were going to keep the siblings together. But the state would not help them financially until they got certified. And they couldn't get certified until they had enough beds. They were short like 4 beds. Now, even by IKEA standards, that's easily $600 to $800 right there, okay? And so that's not an easy thing for people just to kind of come up with. So again, we need to be donating things like that old crib that's collecting dust in your garage, or that dresser that you thought you were going to refinish and, you know, make it look fabulous. You know, it's just sitting there staring at you. You're never going to do it. You're never going to do it. You know, that needs to find a home. It needs to find a home. We need to get other things like clothing, toys, and just other items that kids might need. You know, our daughter's 11 now. And so we've long since departed with her toddler clothes. You know, we gave them away a long time ago. And so when we brought Mariah into our home, we didn't have anything. And $75 from DCS wasn't really going to cut it. But there was a family that donated clothing that their daughter had, and it was awesome. I mean, it was a huge blessing to receive that clothing. And so these families, they need your support. They need to feel like they're not alone. And unless you're willing to take the kids into your own homes, we need to enable those that are willing to take kids into their homes. Now, the second squadron of support needs to be to help keep foster and adoptive families healthy. It's easy for these families to feel alone in their efforts, okay? They need to be encouraged, counseled, and refreshed. Parenting a child that is broken can be very draining, and that is the understatement of the year. It's possible to foster or adopt a child, do everything right, give them everything they need, and yet they may still never really love you because there's a bond missing. There was something torn in them that was never repaired. Sometimes that bond can be repaired, but sometimes it cannot. And it doesn't mean that the family gets to quit. It just means that their job got that much more difficult. And they're going to need the support of their church for moral and physical and just emotional support. You know, an easy thing that all of us can do, you can do it this week. Find someone who's fostering or recently adopted a child. Babysit. Practical. Very practical. Okay. Now, some of you are thinking, no problem, I'll just send my teen over there. Problem solved. Well, not that easy. If someone is fostering, They're not allowed to have teenagers babysit. So there's a lot of youth that when we started babysitting, they're like, no, I'm unemployed now, you know, because we would always hire youth for our babysitters, but we can't do that anymore. It has to be somebody that's over the age of 18. So you don't get to send your firstborn unless she's over or he's over 18. It has to be you. This happened last service. I lost my place right at that point. Now, the other part where we really need to support, and this is really important thing for the church to do, because often the thing that gets neglected with these families is the marriage. You know, the statistics are very high with marriages, whether there's special needs involved, fostering system, or adoption. And we need to make sure that we are supporting these marriages. These couples need to be refreshed. They need to get away. And so sometimes it looks like us providing respite care so they can just get away for a couple days. And sometimes even with their own biological kids. Now, in addition, there are actually single parents who are doing this. Okay, they don't have the luxury of a partner in this endeavor to give them rest when they desperately need it. And so we, the church, we need to make sure that they're getting the rest and the refreshment that they need, because it's not easy. Now, support groups are another area of support that is needed, and the church definitely needs to step up on this one. Now, on the surface, this just looks like a bunch of struggling families having a big group hug and a good cry together. I get that. But in truth, families who foster or adopt, they need a safe place. And when I say safe place, it means a place where they can just be really transparent about the feelings that they're struggling with. This is very important. My own experience, this really shocked me. Because fostering an adorable 2-year-old girl has literally driven me to my knees in prayer. It has revealed a lot of ugliness that was inside of me that I didn't think was there. But it was. Judgment. And even prejudice. And I realized that there's a lot of room for growth. A lot of room for growth. And while it has been an incredibly difficult experience at times, it has given me an opportunity to grow in areas that I probably wouldn't have otherwise. And I have had the pleasure of seeing a child that was at one time emotionless smile and laugh and dance and sing as if she has no fear in the world. And yes, I've learned to re-embrace let it go again. I thought I was past it. It's come back. It's like a boomerang. I've seen a 2-year-old that couldn't communicate blossom in her vocabulary. I've seen a 2-year-old that was not bonded to anyone in her family bond to ours. And I've even watched her relationship with her own parents heal. I got to be a part of that. And not because I'm good at this, but because I was obedient and I was willing to do what God asked me to do, irregardless of the outcome. And I have to say that having people around me that I could go to that have been doing this far longer than me was a godsend. Because when you're doing this, sometimes you just need someone with any kind of credibility telling you that you're not crazy. Because you honestly feel like you are. What am I thinking? What am I doing? I can't do this. I suck at this. Like, I really suck at this. I just need to quit. Like, those are thoughts that have gone through my head. There's no way I can do this. Yes, you can. We've all felt that way. Really? You felt that way? Yeah, oh yeah. I still feel that way. Oh, okay. So this is normal. Yeah, this is normal. So really, kooky people should be doing this. Yeah. So I'm going to be a kooky person. Yeah, you're going to be a kooky person. All right. I'm a kooky person. The last squadron we need for support is simply for household tasks. And I know that this sounds manipulative, but just hear me out, okay? But we need support for household tasks and just simple routine maintenance. Because when you adopt, you're doing more than just bring another child into your home, okay? There are countless meetings and classes and appointments that happen on the front end. And when you bring a new child home, you know, there's more appointments needed to get your child documented as a legitimate dependent. You know, when you have a foster child, you have more than an additional mouth to feed. You have therapy appointments, multitudes of doctor's appointments for various reasons. You have court dates, meetings with the case manager, meetings with the licensing agents, the foster care review boards, meetings with the GAL, who is the lawyer that represents the children in your care, additional weekly transport of either different schools or child care facilities, and then, of course, parent visitation. There's a lot that gets added to your plate. Now, there are services out there that assist families with some of these things, but they're not always easy to get. And sometimes, even though you get them, they're not always the best option for the well-being of the child. So as families are absorbing these new demands in addition to the ones that they already have, guess what falls through the cracks? All the women are like, I already know. Guys are like, what? What's my wife do at home all day? Housework, yard work, routine maintenance, all kinds of things start falling through the cracks. I remember sitting in my therapist's office and just chatting with him not too long ago, and I remember saying, you know what would have helped us in just the first 2 months? And you know, he leans in, he's like, what would it be? You know, prayer, you know, intervention. No. Laundry. Seriously, if someone had done laundry for us in those first 2 months, that would have been like miraculous. Because we had like a mountain this high. I think our kids were lost in there for a week, all right? It would have been awesome. And it would have felt like that whole experience was just so much easier, just not even have to think about laundry. I don't know about you all have your thing, but that's the one thing I hate. I hate laundry. It just doesn't go away. Never goes away. And my kids seem to wear like 10 times the amount of clothes that I do. It's like, really? Really? I know, I got off on a tangent. Sorry. Some of the greatest help, though, and support that you can give is to just simply take over some of the household tasks for the first couple months during a transition. Okay, now I'm not suggesting that you do people's laundry for the rest of their lives, okay? Unless you want to. In that case, come see me after service. But seriously, if you don't want to do it, send your kids over there. It'll be great character building opportunities for them. But we need to pull weeds. We need to trim yards, trim bushes, mow, laundry, all kinds of stuff. And if you don't have the time, but you have the resources, hire someone. Because when we all pitch in and sacrifice, it makes the load for those who are directly caring for the kids much lighter. And the kids benefit from having a foster or an adoptive parent that are a little less stressed by the additional demands placed on them. And let me add that the importance of this is far more than you can realize. Because until you have stood in the shoes of a foster or an adoptive parent, it's impossible to truly describe. It really is. You can't. Half of foster parents in the United States quit within a year of their first placement. Additionally, close to 20% of adoptive families either disrupt the adoption process or worse, dissolve an adoption that's already gone through. That's not an encouraging statistic. We need to empower these families and support them in a way that creates sustainability for them. They need our help. Now, I think one of the most tragic things that I've learned about in this whole process of looking at this system and educating myself and getting involved, getting my hands dirty and getting bit and all kinds of other things that take place is that there are kids that get aged out of this system. And can I just say that if there was one thing that the church really eradicated, this is one of them. There are kids that stay as foster kids until they turn 18 and then they're just kind of let go. They're never adopted. They're never given a family. And the implications of that are ugly. Because by the time these kids reach the age of 26, they are 3 times more likely to have dropped out of school or never completed an education above a high school diploma. Only 4% of them will ever earn a 4-year degree or more. More than half of these kids are currently unemployed. Nearly 70% of those whom are women currently receive food stamps. And nearly 65% of those whom are male have been or are currently incarcerated. For these kids, while their peers have an average income of about $27,000, now again, we're talking about 26-year-olds, they don't need that much money. Some of them are still living at home. Their average income is just $9,000. There's a huge gap there. So as I mentioned earlier, despite what your worldview may be, the care of these kids will impact the kind of future that you're hoping for when it comes to this country. And so we need to engage in this issue. And the Bible tells us that we need to engage in this issue. But when it comes to caring for orphans, it's time for the church to unplug from good intentions and start plugging into meaningful actions. Okay? We simply have to make sure that these children are cared for. We need to do everything we can to help their struggling families get healthy. We need to make sure that every child has a family to live with, even if it's temporary. And we simply cannot allow children to remain waiting on an adoption list until they turn 18. We cannot allow that to happen, people. I've mentioned this in the past, but you know, one of the things that really captured my attention when I first came to this church was how many people were either adopting or were involved in the foster care system. It overwhelmed me. In fact, it was one of those things, it kind of convicted me. It kind of said, well, you know better. Why aren't you doing anything? I'm like, you know what? Yeah. And so it really motivated us. You guys encouraged us to step up our game. And so I simply want to invite the rest of us to be a part of the issue. Now, I'm not going to lie to you. It would be hard. But the payoff is worth it. These kids are worth it. And as we've stated in the beginning of this entire series, we've been known for far too long for what we oppose. It is long overdue for the church to be known for how and who we love. But it starts right here in our backyard with the poor and the orphan in our own cities and neighborhoods. We need to get in the battle for the souls of these children. We need to cause this world to once again take notice and say what Tertullian said back in 8197, look how they loved one another and how they are ready to die for each other. And here's the simple truth. When the church is caring for the poor and becoming home to the orphans, the world changes. In ancient Rome, the Christians went throughout the streets and found the infants that had been discarded and abandoned on the street corners. Many of these children were sick, deformed in some way, or had some kind of blemish that was undesirable. And these Christians would take these children home, and they would raise them. And no wonder the number of Christians were spreading so rapidly while the number of pagan families were diminishing. And no wonder an entire empire crumbled under the weight of love shown. Let's pray. Lord, we just want to acknowledge that this topic is heavy. So God, help us just to place aside any shame or guilt or any condemnation that may have been received by me. Lord, that is not my heart, and I don't believe that was your intention. But God, show us simply, where do we plug into this process? Do we open our homes? Do we support those that are? Do we advocate? What do we do, God? Where are you calling us to be a part of this issue that is near and dear to your heart? How are we to be the light of the earth and the salt of this world, Lord? Show us. And God, give us the courage and the strength and then the boldness to step forward into an area that will probably scare many of us to death. So just speak, God. We give you permission to speak. It's in Jesus' name we pray. Amen.